took some man's antibiotics. Show the lime I know what's up. Symptoms were all over and my gut was 10 years older. But fuck it, I don't know what to do. I'm living out in Utah. For red sauna in my room. I'm losing money daily cause I'm healing like crazy. Cause I spend it on ozone tools. You don't wanna be sick like me. All just from one tick like me. You don't wanna be researching every minute all alone. You don't wanna be tired like this. When you need to sleep wired like this. You don't wanna be stuck up in your home singing. Stuck up in your home singing. All I know, I've no idea which doctor's right or wrong. Darling, all I know, I've no idea when this'll be gone. I'm just a top producer who lost all he had. I get along with old friends cause I talk about the trend of making big money once again. I can't keep a girl, no. They all love me at first sight. But when I crash for 3 weeks, pushing back the next meet, they all think I'm ghosting them upright. You don't wanna be sick like me, just from one.
And so it was the loneliest experience I've ever experienced. Like the level of, you know, I had moved to Thailand on a one-way ticket, start over in a whole new country. I moved to live in Colombia or Chile and stuff. And I thought, you know, I thought I knew what loneliness was until I had just crippling health issues and then completely alone, no one there. And so I really had to get to know myself and become my best friend. And, you know, I read books like one book was called like Safe People or something like that, about creating healthy relationships and just like the self-sufficiency I had to develop.
Wishing your doctors could communicate and come up with a cohesive plan specific to your medical needs and genetics? At Invita Medical Center, they offer a team-style approach, giving you the opportunity to heal. In addition to a commitment of providing radical love and care for their patients, they are strategically located in sunny Arizona because Arizona offers the best integrative medical laws in the country. Call today to speak with one of their patient care coordinators. You can find them online at Invita.com.
Lyme Voice thanks Invita Medical for the continued support. Please reach them at 1-866-830-4576.
With me today is TJ Nelson. TJ, thank you so much for being here on Lyme Voice.
How's it going?
Going good. You ready to talk about all things Lyme?
I'm ready. I'm ready for it.
Which we already started with our prior conversation of coffee enemas, so we're cruising.
I should have done one today for the interview. Should have just held it in during the whole interview.
Oh, no. So, TJ, give us the 3 to 5 minute version of your Lyme story and how it's impacted your life. And I saw a video that TJ did on Facebook a while back, and he wrote a great song, the song you just heard the clip of, and we're going to dive into some of it. Because I think I love music. I am not musically inclined. And with Lyme Voice, we have about 60 episodes now. So some of those episodes are over an hour long. So it's 60 plus hours. And I was thinking, you summed up in 3 minutes what we've been talking about for 3 years. So yeah, just give us your synopsis.
The 3 to 5 minute. Okay. Well, there's like, okay, so about 4 years ago, I was in Thailand and Vietnam, and I got really bad food poisoning, which destroyed my gut. So I just had really bad gut problems. And like most of your immune system comes from your gut flora. I had to move back from Asia, and I was going broke from all the medical bills. So I went and started selling solar door to door in Vegas to make money. And I started knocking doors, selling solar in Vegas. Then we all went to Dallas, Texas, and I was just working on healing my gut. And then I was working nonstop There was a lot of stress. No one could beat my work ethic. I could wake up 9 p.m. I'd work until 10 p.m. and then rinse and repeat every day. So I was working nonstop, had a bunch of stress, and I'm not sure when I was exposed to Lyme. I can't pinpoint it exactly, but I would say I've probably had it 2 to 3 years, and I had it when I was selling solar at a certain point. I'm just not sure when it started flourishing, but whenever it got in there, since I had a bad gut flora and then I was stressed out of my mind, working nonstop, always on the go, my immune system was really compromised. And then a whole bunch of stressful events happened while I was selling solar. And then I just completely collapsed, and it got to the point where I could barely walk. Like, my only goal for the day was go for a walk for 15, 20 minutes outside, because I just had no energy, crushing fatigue, pain, brain fog, all sorts of stuff. And I was doing all these random tests. They thought I just had Epstein-Barr, and I'd done the really generic, inaccurate Lyme test when I was in Dallas, and it said negative. And, but that was one of those really crappy ones, like probably 10 to 20% actually shows positive on it. So I was living in Austin, just really confused, doing nothing. And weird marks started appearing on my skin. So also this weird mark would appear on my abdomen. And I was like, you know, looked like an alien or something just scratched me while I was sleeping. And I was like, oh, yes, it's a little weird. And then I was like, all right, well, there's no point in me being in Texas anymore if I can't sell solar. I had some friends in San Diego. I went over to San Diego. That was January of 2017. Still getting weird marks. Went in to see a doctor in February. He saw the mark, looked at my knees, had tendonitis in my knees, ran a full panel, came back, Lyme, Bartonella, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, all those co-infections. And then that's when I realized I had Lyme. And, I think I was in denial for a really long time as well, because selling solar, everything I did was always, I can do it with just my mind. You know, like you go out, people would be like, oh, you know, I can't go out and knock doors, or no one wants solar today. You know, no one's interested. And so I was so trained mentally to just push through pain, just keep going. I thought that I could do the same thing with Lyme. So I kept trying to do the same methods, and obviously it wasn't working. And yeah, last year, 2017 in San Diego was probably one of the worst periods of my life. Like, I was getting all these weird rashes all the time. I could barely function at one point. I couldn't even read. And like, I would try to read and I couldn't even understand it. And I spent probably 2017 in San Diego, I spent probably six to seven months, every single day, like my mind just had hardcore suicidal thoughts all day, every day for like 6 months straight. So I just had to, it was, you know, I thought, cause like selling, when I was selling for the largest residential solar company. It's now Tesla, it was Solar City, but in the country, and I was, you know, the number one in the country, you know, so
wow.
I did a lot of stuff before that, ran a marathon, everything. And so I thought, but the hardest thing I've ever done by far was survive through Lyme. And it was just like every day, just crushing fatigue and having to force myself to either read a book or just do the smallest little action, just get up in the morning and just keep trying to figure it out, because you know, a lot of doctors have different opinions. A lot of doctors don't know what they're doing. So it's like, you have to figure it out yourself.
Yeah. Did you know at the time, as you're going through all this suicidal stuff, did you know, okay, this is probably the Lyme causing this?
Yeah, I knew it was the Lyme. And I had had depression before, like quite a while ago, that I had to like overcame it by fixing vitamin and mineral deficiencies. And I was sensitive to gluten and dairy. So I had experienced depression before, so pretty bad, but the Lyme was so severe, and it was a different kind of, it was like the brain fog was so thick that I was just in a state of pure confusion, and it's very lonely too. So it was intense.
You know, you said, I thought I could push my way through it, which I think so many people, especially if you're high functioning to begin with, assume I did. I'm like, oh, I just keep going. I just keep doing it. I'll read a couple of books and figure it out.
I had a lot of friends too. And like, it was pretty bizarre because, I mean, I was really into your thoughts and mind can control everything, you know, all that stuff. And so it was kind of hard too, because then I started watching all my friends and they were succeeding. And then some people, they weren't actually that good of friends, but I thought they were close friends. But I had one friend who was really big into law of attraction and stuff so they started putting the blame on me. Like, I attracted the deer tick with my thoughts, and that if I just thought better, I would be healed from the Lyme, all that crap. So it was really isolating, and it was a very big reality check that you're not. And you have some control, and there is a lot of aspects that your mind can control, like, you know, going out selling solar, just keep staying positive and going out and just keep going. But at the same time, it was a very big like realization that, okay, if something infects me with a disease, it can wipe me out, and I don't have a choice. Something bites me and infects me with something, you know, it can be game over, or you know, it can take me down to where I can't control everything. So that was a very big realization.
Yeah. So what made you write the song?
So I was feeling pretty good, October through November, December last year. Tried to go off antibiotics and try this thing called LDI, which I never really fully understood why LDI would work anyways, but I tried to go off antibiotics, tried to do this new method. And then January completely collapsed. Like, January was just a lost month. And then February, I tried to go to Tijuana to get stem cells. I was like, all right, I'm just going to go get some stem cells. And I drove all the way. I have friends in San Diego and stuff. So I drove to Vegas and San Diego and then Tijuana. They told me that since I was on antibiotics, they looked at my blood and said I had too much Lyme in my blood, that the stem cells wouldn't do anything because they'd come in and just basically die. And so I came back to where I'm in Utah right now. So I came back home and I just was kind of having, you know, I keep it really positive, but I was like, you know what? I just need to express, you know, some of these moments when I'm down. And what it's like. And there's a song, I took a pill in Ibiza and I just modified it, changed it. And I just changed it to, I took some antibiotics and I just wrote it out pretty fast. This was came to me. And then I had the song.
Nice. So where are you at this point? Like, what percentage are you functioning at, do you think?
Right now, I would say, probably mentally, I'm like 85%, physically 70, which is pretty good. Yeah. Like, I actually lifted some light weights and went on a walk before this.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm on three antibiotics right now though. So if I tried to stop them, who knows?
So one of the things that I thought was so interesting about your song is you say in there, I can't keep a girlfriend because, what did you say, after 3 weeks if I don't call him back?
Yeah. I was saying, after we meet, you know, it's all good. But then when I crash for 3 weeks, pushing back the next meet, they all think I'm ghosting them upright. So I was kind of having this period. So I'd feel good for a week or two. And I'd be like, awesome. You know, I start doing stuff, being social and start dating. And then I would crash. And so I'd kind of just, you know, be putting people off because it's, I mean, right now I can go and do stuff. It's totally fine. But before it was just like, I kept trying to do the whole push through it. Like, no, it's all right. When I feel really crappy to try and hang out with people. But when you feel really down or when you feel really crappy and super tired, like there's just no point.
Right.
For at least new people.
Right.
So I was like, you know, I just stopped. And so, you know, I meet them. And then it'd be really good. We hit it off. And then all of a sudden, you know, it'd be 2-3 weeks. I'd just kind of be putting them off because I was feeling like crap. And then it would just kind of fizzle out. So it was just like the cycle. I'd feel good, start meeting new people. And then I'd crash and then they'd fizzle out.
Right. Well, it's interesting because that's one of the major questions. That topic of conversation about trying to date with Lyme disease comes up a lot. And I never know what to say because I'm not in that realm. But when you said that, I thought, golly, I think it would be really hard or almost impossible.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a few times, like a few social events, like last month I was feeling pretty crappy and I used to have, okay, here's the other thing. Yeah. I guess someone actually got mad at me for this, which makes sense, but I would always be really vague when people would be like, hey, can you want to meet on Thursday? And I'd kind of be really vague. And then Thursday morning, based on how I'd feel, I'd be like, okay, I can commit.
Right.
And so I had to be like, no, you can't do that. Just commit to the date. Worst case scenario, just reschedule it the day of. But I was, you know, so I probably drove some people crazy because they're trying to be like, hey, you know, but I was randomly calling like, hey, can you want to hang out right now? You know, and they're like, what? Because that's when I felt good. So I never like made plans with anyone. I would just spontaneously call them and ready to go.
See, it's so weird because I did so much of that stuff, like unconsciously. You know, I began after a certain number of times canceling on people, then you get to the point where you don't want to make plans in advance because you have to cancel and then try to reschedule, which for me was just overwhelming because I could barely keep up with what I had to do, let alone going back 2 weeks and rescheduling. But in a dating relationship, that would even be weirder. Because it would seem non-committal or casual or...
Yeah.
So Aaron's not on the interview today because our kids are all home for spring break. So he's downstairs on dad duty. But we were just saying specifically about trying to date. Would you ever date someone who had Lyme?
It's kind of interesting because like if someone has really bad Lyme, it could be hard if we're both kind of at a certain stage where we're a little bit healthy, maybe,
but I know.
I haven't really thought about it too much. I remember one person where I was kind of like, cause there's a whole debate too on whether or not it's sexually transmitted.
Right.
And so I was like kind of joking with one person. I was like, cause she had seen like my stand-up comedy show or whatever. And I was like, but she didn't even know what she had. And it was kind of like, we might just like mix all these co-infections in this big pathogen brew of, you know, so it's kind of, I wouldn't be against it, but there's kind of a lot of gray area
right
going on.
Right. Which is all of Lyme. But it was funny because I said something about, oh, well, if two Lyme people dated, and he's like, no, that would be terrible. That would never work. You have to have at least one healthy person. And I was like, well, but if you're both sick and you both, you know, like you have different expectations when you're sick, so maybe it would work. He's like, no, it wouldn't work.
I definitely only can date someone seriously that understands health. Like it's into being healthy, because if not, they're going to wonder why I'm on a ketogenic diet. I have this kombucha brewing up on my counter, you know, sauerkraut, coffee enemas, ozone going up.
Infrared sauna in your room.
Infrared sauna in my room. Yeah. So like actually a lot of people, I would just kind of ask them if they like to eat healthy and stuff just to, kind of see where they're at. Cause if they're like, hell no, I love me some McDonald's, I don't give a shit. You know, it's like, I don't know if we'd really connect that well.
You're crossing them off the list.
Because I can't eat anything. Like, if you love going to random restaurants and just eating a ton of stuff, like, I'm not going to be able to do that.
Yeah, for sure.
And even if I could, I wouldn't actually. But it's because, like, yeah, someone was on Facebook just recently and they're on some ketogenic diet group because that's been helping a lot with my symptoms. And she was saying how sucks how all this healthy food is expensive. And I was like, you know, healthy food is not expensive. What's expensive is having your body break down.
Yeah.
Like I've easily spent, you know, 30 grand plus last year alone in all the medical and all those costs. And that's not, doesn't include the opportunity cost.
Oh yeah.
Of what I could have made. So, I mean, it's like, do you want to pay $30 every now and then to change the oil in your car? Or do you want the car to break and pay $3,000 for a new engine?
Yeah.
It's like healthy food is actually really cheap. Like if you think of it that way. So.
Yeah. There's the whole sect of people who won't understand that though.
Yes. I mean, yeah, you don't get it till you get it.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I also understand. So it's kind of hard. It's like, if you've never been super sick, like it's just hard to comprehend. I have one friend, he's just been super healthy his whole life. I think he's 40 something. He's like 40 right now. And he can still go out and just drink alcohol all night for like 4 days in a row and then recover in half a day.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, what? And he's just like, yeah, we've talked. He's like, you know, I wish I could understand more, but I just always felt good. Like I've always had good health.
Well, I guess if you don't have to. So another one of your lines in there is you said, I have no idea which doctor is right or wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd go one doctor and I think they had the solution, like the one with the Epstein-Barr. I thought that was it, doing all this stuff. And then it's like, oh, actually, it's not Epstein-Barr. It's Lyme and all this other crazy stuff. And then one doctor's like, just take this. And then the other doctor's like, oh, you need to do this. And then it's like I go and find another doctor. I'm like, oh, this is the one. They know what they're doing. And then it ends up, okay, my testosterone levels are way too high because he had me injecting too much testosterone. And now it's over converting into like DHT and estrogen. And now I got to figure out how to wean off it and hopefully didn't do any damage. And now I got to go to this other doctor and try this new method. So I kind of just view it. I'm my own doctor. And, the other, like it's 80% of it's on me. And the other doctors is to pinpoint and refine. Like when I go into the doctor, I have a whole timeline of my symptoms so they can better pinpoint like anything that they see.
Yeah.
I have a whole folder full of all my tests. I come with questions prepared. Like, hey, I got this fever at night and the next day I was kind of cold, like is that babesia? And so I go in there ready for action. So
yeah,
I'm not just going in hoping that a doctor's going to take care of me. Cause there's a lot of people that kind of hate on doctors too, which I stay away from that. I mean, unless the doctor's like consciously just trying to make a ton of money off people, but most doctors are trying their best.
Yeah.
And a lot of doctors are screwed because we're not really the consumers. The insurance companies are the consumers because they're the ones that are paying the doctors.
Yeah, I agree. Totally. And
so they got a pack. They got all this medical debt. They got to pack in 20 patients a day. So yeah, most doctors, not their fault. You have to go to the ones that's out of pocket, Lyme specialists, you know, paying multiple $100s per appointment, but that's the only really way you're going to find a doctor that can help you with Lyme.
How long do you think it took you to realize when I go into an appointment, I have to be the proactive one? I have to be steering the ship, because I was the same way. But it took me a couple of years to realize nothing was going to happen if I didn't go in there with a plan.
Yeah, I already kind of knew that because before when I had depression, I remember in college and that period, I had depression. I went in and they'd see me for 5 minutes. I'd be like, yeah, I'm feeling like this. And I'd be like, well, here's a pill. They said I'd have to take antidepressants for the rest of my life. But then I did my own research and fixed it. And then that's when I was like, okay, so I already knew that consciously, but at the same time, I was so tired that, part of me would forget or stop. And then I start, just trusting one doctor too much or just hoping that they would. It was more like a hopeful, I wish, I could get cured at just this one magical clinic. I go in, they do everything for me. They're on the ball, but it's like they see a lot of people. No one knows me better than myself. So it was more like every now and then I have to remind myself, hey, this doctor, I get excited when I see a new doctor and be like, well, it's like, you still got to research, double check, look at the blind spots. So it was more of, I think I was more trying to have a doctor do it for myself just because I had so much fatigue.
Yeah.
I was just tired. I was like, I just want someone to cure me.
Yeah.
I just want to lay in bed and have someone just come cook all the food, do everything, lift me up, put me in the sauna.
Yeah. I want that too.
That's what I wanted.
So how have your friends and support network handled this whole thing for you? Because you moved back home, right? You got sick to the point you moved back home.
Yeah, it was really bad. So I had to come back to Utah. It's been a wild ride because two things have happened. First is I've really realized who my true friends are and what a true friend is.
Mm.
And because a lot of friends just, they went away. It's like everyone loved me when I was the guy that helped them make a lot of money selling solar. And I was, basically I was kind of mini celebrity almost because I was doing so good. And then when I got sick, some of those same people just kept going and were like, whatever, and left me behind. Now there, it's kind of hard. I don't remember a lot some of the stuff, and I probably was pretty toxic because I was really negative and frustrated and I was in denial. So some friends that didn't understand it, probably maybe I did push them away, but I still have some friends. I have some very solid friends that stuck through, and although they couldn't, but and this other thing that happened was at the end of the day, though, even with a few select friends, I was still on my own.
Right.
I'm still on my own. They have their problems. They have stuff to do and they don't fully understand what's going on with me. And so it was the loneliest experience I've ever experienced. The level of, I had moved to Thailand on a one-way ticket, start over in a whole new country. I moved to live in Colombia or Chile and stuff. And I thought, I thought I knew what loneliness was until I had just crippling health issues and then completely alone, no one there. And so I really had to get to know myself and become my best friend. And, I read books like one book was called Safe People or something like that about creating healthy relationships and just the self-sufficiency I had to develop. I don't think anything that's the one gift, I guess you could say, that Lyme gave me was, I know myself and I went through the horrible fatigue, just hardcore. I had to get up and drink water type of, I remember I in San Diego one time, I was so tired. I went to lay in the bathtub to do a detox bath. And I laid in the bathtub for 2.5 hours with just a dry bathtub.
Right.
Before I turned the water on. And I was like, before I even turned the water on, I was just laid there for 2.5 hours because I was so messed up. So it was, I learned I've been forced to be very self-sufficient.
For nearly two decades, Invita Medical Center has been leading the way with the latest in personalized treatment options designed for patients dealing with Lyme disease complex. At Invita Medical Center, they offer a team-style approach and the latest technology regarding treatment and testing at an unmatched, radical love and care environment for their patients. Call to speak to one of the patient care coordinators today to learn why hundreds of patients choose Invita Medical Center each year. You can find them online at Invita.com. Hi guys, I want to let you know about a book I wrote called Little Bite, Big Trouble, and I'm going to read a review that recently came in. This is from Carolyn, and she says, "Thank you so much for writing your book. It has become the means by which I have explained Lyme to my four-year-olds. They ask for it to be read as a bedtime story over and over again, and love that the mama birdie does yoga and juicing like their mommy. I can't thank you enough for writing this book. It has helped my family so much." You can find it today at Amazon.com, Little Bite, Big Trouble. So you had true friends. So through that experience, you said it did two things. You realized really what a true friend was.
Oh, yeah.
How a true friend acts. But then you also realize that even while moving across the country with a one-way ticket, being isolated with an illness is an entirely different level of loneliness.
Oh, totally different ballgame. The level of isolation and loneliness is it's hard to describe because, like, yeah, when I was in San Diego, I could barely read. I was like mentally stupid. Like I remember at one point I was like, I'm literally handicapped. I'm disabled right now. And then it's, you know, I still look good on the outside, obviously.
Yeah.
So a lot of people just don't even understand. A lot of people don't really know what Lyme is. And then you have friends and they're kind of just confused. And because, you know, you're acting weird or whatever. So it's like, you know, you can't even go, you know, friends would invite me to go do stuff. But it's like, if I go there, I'm so out of it. It's like, if I go to a party, I'm just going to be like laying on the couch, like destroyed. And then on the other hand too, like no one really knows what, you know, it's kind of, I mean, I don't wish I had cancer because, you know, I mean, obviously a lot, some cancer is really bad, but other cancers aren't too bad. And I almost wish that, you know, if I just had a cancer that was kind of the equivalent, wasn't going to like kill me, but if I could take the same experience and just have it be cancer instead,
right.
I kind of said, you know, I wish I just had cancer because then people or something similar. Cause then I could just be like, you know, yeah, I've got cancer. And then people would be like, oh, how can I help you? Like, are you okay? But it's like, oh, I got Lyme. And they'd be like, oh, is that like from a tick or something?
Right.
You know, like no one knows how severe it really is. And then some people don't think it's severe at all because maybe they heard of one guy who their friend got Lyme and it wasn't that bad, or they caught it early. And so they're like, oh, well, I mean, my friend just, he's fine. So it was just very isolating. You have a illness that no one really recognizes or understands, like AIDS in the 1980s or whatever. And so you have something no one understands. It's very crippling, destroys your life, makes so you can't do stuff. And yet people just think it's this weird thing and they don't understand. So you're just completely isolated, chronically fatigued, unable to do anything. And then no one really can understand you.
Yeah. So then making new friends is almost impossible in that scenario. Did you find that you grew closer to your solid people or to the, well, grow closer as much as you can when you're trying not to die?
So yeah, I have a couple friends where it's like, yeah, it's, they're there for me. And I've definitely learned because there were some transactional friendships I think I had before, where it's more like, hey, you just help me get more successful. I help you get more successful. And I really learned like what a true friend is versus an acquaintance. Some good friends still a little bit distance, but then other friends the relationship was deepened even more. And I mean, if I start, you know, doing really good again, I'm definitely taking care of those friends. I mean, when I was in San Diego, when I collapsed, I had one friend in Vegas. He drove over that night, stayed with me for 5-6 days and helped me move to Utah.
Wow. So that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and then, I mean, now before, I think I kind of had maybe a level of neediness, or not neediness so much, but I wanted people to like me. And so it was more like, I was more going out like, hey, do you like me? Versus now, since I really know my values, I really know what kind of people I vibe with and what kind of person makes a great friend. Cause I don't think I was really the best friend. I could have been a lot better friend too. Yeah. And now that I know what makes a good friend, it's more like I'm confident in who I am, because I mean, I was forced to be one-on-one with myself for, you know, and so it's more like I'm kind of going around like, hey, do I like this person? Hey, do I want this person in my life? And I can kind of tell who is a genuine person versus who just wants to use me. There's a lot of people when I was selling solar that tried to manipulate me into helping them and stuff like that. So I'm very aware of who is my actual friend and who isn't.
Huh. So really, I mean, it's what I hear you saying is it's really shifted your perspective when you're out and about looking for friendships, looking for opportunities, looking for the next step in your journey. You have a very different perspective just based on who you know you are.
Yeah, it's who I know I am. And then also the friendships I had before, they weren't bad friendships, but I thought that because I had friends that like, they came in to sell solar and I was just, they were like wanting to quit and I would go knocking doors with them. I would help them. They were always down. I was like, hey, come live with me, stay in my living room. I was just always there for them. And then when I got really sick, they abandoned me. And so it's not so much like they're bad people necessarily, yeah, but it's just different values. Like their values were, if you're not healthy, capable, or if you're not on a certain level. Okay, so here's one thing that I really don't like in the entrepreneur world. I really don't agree with is there's all this stuff on Facebook or Instagram where it's like, okay, so you know, the whole saying you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with.
Right.
But then people take that and then they're like, okay, I can't be around anyone that is not doing good. And I kind of bought into that a little bit. I was kind of like, yeah, I got to always just be, you know, like leveling up. And it's kind of this weird thing where it's like, if you're not at a high level, then can't be around you. And I kind of experienced, I was like at a high level, people want to be around me. And then I dropped down and got messed up and those same people weren't there anymore.
Right.
And so I think there's a guy, Ed Milet, I forget his name, but I remember watching his video too. And he was like, yeah, I totally hate that saying where you ditch your friends with, if they're not on your level. It's like, you don't just cut out an old friendship. You can add new friends. Like, let's say you're trying a new business venture. So you add new friends that are doing the same thing here, or you're really into eating healthy. So you add friends over here, but you don't just cut out a person because they go through a hard time.
Right. Absolutely not. I think they're missing the spirit of that saying. Right. It's actually being said, but the spirit behind it, there's truth in the spirit behind it, but it doesn't mean you literally need to cut people out of your life for that one reason.
Yeah. I see it all the time too on Facebook. It's like, oh, if your friends aren't making a bunch of money, just cut them out. You know, it's like, whoa, easy, slow down. Like, No, you don't just do that. But yeah, there's kind of that theme there. And I was kind of in that crowd. And so I experienced what it was like to get cut out, I guess.
Wow. So how do you think that'll shape you moving forward? Because it sounds like you're a committed entrepreneur.
Yeah, the way my brain works, like I feel uncomfortable when I'm comfortable. So what I like is the pushing, the striving, like, hey, let's try some stand-up comedy. That's really scary.
Right.
Hey, let's do this. And so, yeah, I'm actually right now, I just got back from Phoenix. I'm kind of looking over there, might have a way to get a warehouse going, maybe even do solar again on the part-time or do consulting and stuff. Cause I'm feeling a little bit better, and kind of my bigger vision is I can, go and succeed at a really high level, but then take care of the people that need help, because one, it's kind of sad realization as well. So the only reason why, well, maybe not the only, but one of the main reasons why I am improving and getting better is because I had saved money up when I was selling. So I was saving everything. And so I have like some small income streams. I'm actually still losing a little bit of money every month, but I had a big savings. And so, and I have some random businesses. So I'm able to primarily focus on my health, and I'm able to make certain decisions. I'm able to see certain doctors, but it was kind of really hard to realize. I was like, if some random, let's say some homeless guy or just some random person that has no resources, maybe they don't even know about health,
right,
they can't go see any good doctor, and they're walking around and they get Lyme, Bartonella, Babesia, Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever, like they have no chance.
No chance. I know.
They have zero chance. And so I was kind of thinking, you know, if my life's going to have meaning, then I can be that person that gets better, gets to a really high level, and then can give back to those people. Because if their chances might be like 0.1%, unless someone comes in and helps them.
Right.
Because yeah, if you can't see a doctor, if you can't eat healthy, if you can't get the supplements, if you can't do the ozone, if you can't do the detox baths, like, I mean, if you can't even get a diagnosis, what can that person do?
Oh, I know. I mean, we've had that conversation so many times, because we actually moved up to Colorado a few months back. We're going to attend Karis Bible College, and we want to open a recovery center. And for that same reason, because we had some resources and we're functioning, high functioning and capable, and yet you can only be sick for so many years before you really do run out of resources. And we've had that same thought because, okay, it's not even just finances. Say you have some finances, but you're coming, you're living in a highly toxic, emotionally abusive environment, which a lot of people are living in. Like even that one thing, even after you have the right medical care, coming home and trying to recover in an environment that's unhealthy emotionally, like that's a whole nother level that I think, how do you, is it even possible to recover in that type of an environment? So you have finances, but you have all these other huge things too.
Yeah. You like have to work all day just to pay for stuff. And you're going home to like two roommates that don't like you or think you're faking it. And then and there's like mold in the house or something.
Right.
Yeah. When I moved back to Utah, I was looking around and I picked a building that was built 3-4 years ago. Cause I was like, I can't move into some old place because if there's mold in there, I'm done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. It is. You're right. It is a wild ride.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I'm spending like 40 hours a week. I remember one time when I was really hurting and I was having to do stuff, I added up my hours and it was like 48 hours or something that week that was spent doing IVs in the sauna. All the medical stuff is like 45 hours. So
yeah.
So I had to, you know, have to be really creative. So like in the sauna, I have to have like a remote keyboard and a computer outside the sauna so I can try and do like online work and make money that way. So it's like a constant, like healing Lyme, it's like part the health stuff and getting that right, and then part just getting the money and making money in a way that you can control your stress.
Yep.
To, it was funny because I remember one friend, he was really stressed, and like I was just losing tons of money, and I was like, man, I'm really screwed unless I figure something out. And my friend's like, are you stressed? I was like, well, I'm not. It's weird. I just can't be stressed. Like it was really weird because normally I'd be stressed or trying to make it happen, but I was literally, it's just like all this pressure. And I was like, okay, this is what I have to do. Cause I knew if I got stressed that my immune system would go down and I'd get destroyed. So it was like another, it's like, you have to heal your body, learn and work and make money in highly leveraged ways, and also not be stressed while you do it.
Right. It's funny because, I mean, we're entrepreneurs and everything you're saying, I'm like, yep, that's exactly the boat I've been in. And I owned a real estate brokerage before I got too sick and signed it over, and then didn't work for, it was either 7 or 8 years. And even now I work part-time, but I appear far more productive. Well, that's not true. I am productive, but I'm productive in this very protected environment where I can control my stress, control my schedule. I have very loose deadlines. Like if a project takes 2 months longer, it takes 2 months longer. Like, but I appear to be far more functioning, high functioning than I really am. It's just because I've leveraged everything I can possibly think of to work at my advantage.
Yeah. It's funny. I forget how much I control my environment until I travel.
Yes.
Like when just going to Phoenix, I was like, I had 30 Ziploc bags, all with the supplements prepared, like all my powders in a bag, my oxygen tank and ozone generator, my Rife machine,
right.
Like just loading up all this technology in my friend's house. And that's kind of like, cognitively too, like the protective environment, sometimes, you know, it's really scary to leave it because when you leave that environment, your body can break down and things can happen. And so I almost didn't go to Phoenix, but I've been, and even with this, I think you messaged me on this podcast like a long time ago, but I was kind of putting it off, I think, because I was still doing the whole, I don't know how I'm going to feel thing, but
right. I get that.
Lately I've just been like the Phoenix. I was like, oh man, I'm feeling crap. And I was like, well, let's just go. And if I feel like crap, I'll handle it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'll just handle it. And then I went. And so I'm really working on and doing that. Like instead of being scared and fearful of doing stuff, just like, hey, if I go to Phoenix and I crash, well, then I just drive back early.
Yeah.
Like, that's there you go.
Yeah. It takes a lot to get to that place though. Cause I've had to do the same thing. Like when you can't do stuff for so many years, then when you are at that place where you have, maybe you do have the energy to do that, I've been amazed at the mental battle of trying to live like a normal person again and not live by fear.
Yeah. And a lot of the same, I've noticed I'm having to break some of the same patterns and habits of the coping. And because when I was really sick, I was so out of it. I remember this apartment in Utah when I first got back here. I don't know why I preferred the floor over my bed, but I would just lay on the floor for like 2 hours, 3 hours when I felt like crap. I just lay there. And then I would just numb out to random YouTube videos. Like sometimes they weren't even like beneficial. It was just like weird. Like just you'd forget what you even watched an hour later.
Right.
And just YouTube and numbing out and not doing anything. And then when I'm feeling better, you know, like the other night came home and it was like, I started watching pointless YouTube videos. I was like, whoa, hold up. I'm not super sick. I don't have to do this. It's like, we can do other things.
Right.
And so it's like the habits, the little pathways in my brain of the patterns of what I was doing when I was sick have carried over. So I still have to be pretty conscious of that.
Yeah, I've found the exact same thing. I went through treatment in 2013. So I'm approaching 5 years and I did 2 years of treatment. So really 3 years of fully being in remission, you know, but still like still struggle at times and cognitive dysfunction or, you know, different things, but I'm functioning at such a high level. But I have spent every day consciously undoing and trying not to do those bad, patterned, sick behaviors. And I'm astounded at how much energy it has taken.
Yeah. Yeah. I hired this guy that helps a lot with changing your mind and your patterns and like addictive or coping mechanisms. And so I've had to invest. I mean, it's kind of funny how before I was saying the mind doesn't have as much power as you think, but I mean, the mind is a part of it. I just like to say that because I came from a world where people like mind's everything, but I've had to have him coach me on different stuff. Like, you know, like be like, hey, I want to go to Phoenix or something. And I'm sitting there all scared. And then like dialogue with that part of me that's scared, like, hey, Lime, like what's going on? Oh, well, every time you try and do something, you get messed up and then people think you're weird. And then, you know, you lower your self-esteem and it's all failure. And then it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that's happened before. Does that necessarily mean that's going to happen this time? And then you kind of hear, I kind of like talk to those parts of myself. It's like, well, yeah, it could happen this time. And I kind of like, well, if it does happen this time, what can we do? Oh, well, we can come back or we can do this. And it's like, okay, so let's go for it. You know, so it's like, cause there's a lot of like unconscious patterns. And then I've had to learn how to like talk to, it's like kind of listen to what my brain's actually reasoning and doing to overcome it. Otherwise, yeah, there's still like a lot of patterns I need to break and improve, but there's a lot of the fear, a lot of not wanting to make plans, all that still.
Yeah, it's so weird. So would you label that as like positive self-talk? Like, is that what you've learned to do?
You know, I don't know if it's positive self-talk.
Mindfulness?
I mean, I'm not exactly sure. There's definitely mindfulness. I think the positive self-talk, I could be wrong, but that's more like, hey, you can do this, I'm good. Whereas this is more like a dialogue, like talking to a sub person. Like it's not EMDR. I don't know if you've ever done EMDR.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you're bringing out that part of yourself and you're like talking to it and being mindful of what it's actually doing. It's like the story, the programming, and then trying to write a new program. So it's like the old program, I can't go to Phoenix. I got to bring all this stuff. I'm tired. I don't want to make all my supplements. When I get there, they might think I'm weird because I got this oxygen machine, ozone generator. I might get messed up and I can't do anything. And then it's like, you hear all that and you're just like, you talk to it. It's like, is that really true?
Right.
Is that really the case? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. What a journey, man. Lime sucks on so many levels, but you do learn a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny because one of the things I miss the most is being able to lift weights. I still can't really. It's kind of like my measure of if I'm doing good is if I can lift a little bit of weights, then it's probably a good sign because I just can't lift at all when I'm messed up. And I was like getting weaker and stuff. I kind of had a joke. My friends like, you know, I'm not in the physical weight room, but I'm in the spiritual weight room when I'm getting jacked.
I like that.
Heavy weights in here.
I like that a lot. You're in the spiritual weight room. That is a really good way to articulate that, man.
I got all the weights on in there.
Oh, gosh. All right. Well, thank you so much for being here and thank you for sharing your song with us. Any closing remarks, any books you've read that you want to recommend, documentaries, anything that's been helping you in that spiritual weight room that you want to pass along to our listeners?
I think just the main stuff been helping me is, I meditate every day and I do the dialogue. So I'm listening to myself, talking to myself, and then just constant research and trying things. Brain Maker is a book that taught me a lot about the gut. That.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah. There's a book, 5 Steps to Restoring Health. It was kind of weird. I went on Audible and I was like looking at Lime stuff and some of these like have no reviews, but they're really good. Unlocking Lime was good. Yeah. And one thing I didn't try for a long time, and obviously it won't work for everyone, But the ketogenic diet helped me a lot with brain fog and mental functioning. And I bought these ketogenic exogenous salts a long time ago with test strips, and I just never did it because it was really confusing. And some people aren't going to do good on it. I was already kind of low carb, but it was kind of funny. I accidentally did it because I got like sad. And so all I ate was, all I got back from Tijuana, and all I had was beef, chia seeds, and coconut milk. And then the next day I was like, oh, I'm in ketosis, might as well keep going. It helped a lot. Like I was kind of tired for a few days, and then all of a sudden my brain was very clear. And it's because ketones have very anti-inflammatory response in your body. And when the brain's running on ketones, it helps. It can help your brain function. And my brain fog was still there, but when I went on the ketogenic diet, I think it did two things. It really lowered inflammation, got rid of my brain fog, and I think a lot of the bad bacteria in my gut was feeding off of carbs, so it was helping eliminate those. So it's not, ketogenic diet's not going to work for everyone, but when I finally did it, it made a massive impact in my cognitive functioning.
Huh, good to know. All right, yeah, I've heard that quite a bit, but good to know. Cool. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah.
Wishing your doctors could communicate and come up with a cohesive plan specific to your medical needs and genetics? At Invita Medical Center, they offer a team-style approach, giving you the opportunity to heal. In addition to a commitment of providing radical love and care for their patients, they are strategically located in sunny Arizona because Arizona offers the best integrative medical laws in the country. Call today to speak with one of their patient care coordinators. You can find them online at Invita.com.
Disease is contrary to life. Therefore, wherever disease exists, life must also fight to exist.
Good job fighting, Lyme fighters. Keep it up. We'll see you next time.
Lyme Voice contains general information about medical conditions and treatments. The information is not advice and should not be treated as such. Okay, Lincoln?
Okay.
The medical information on Lyme Voice is provided as is without any representations, warranties, expressed or implied. Okay?
Okay.
Lyme Voice makes no representations or warranties in relation to the medical information on this podcast. You must not rely on the information on this podcast as an alternative to medical advice from your doctor or other professional healthcare provider. If you have any specific questions about your medical matter, you should consult your doctor or other professional healthcare provider. And for you consult your parents, okay?
Okay.
If you think you may be suffering from any medical condition, you should seek immediate medical attention. You should never delay seeking medical advice, disregard medical advice, or discontinue medical treatment because of information on this podcast. Got it, Lincoln?
Got it.